The Law of Equivalent Exchange. This is Tim in Tokyo reading Fullmetal Alchemist in English from Viz.
And this is Patrick in Kumamoto reading Hagaren no... No,
did it again.
See, I always do that. Hagaren no Renkin Jutsushi, the original in Japanese by Hiromu Arakawa, published by Gangan Comics. You know what? You know what I didn't realize? And it took me a while that it's this particular, I believe this is A6, I want to say.
Oh, the size of the
size.
The paperback.
It's this particular size or around near to this size, which is considered the comics size.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see all these publishers that are saying something something comics, like Jump has Jump Comics, they're referring to this particular...
So they don't mean manga, they mean this particular size of publication.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is like mind blown a little bit there.
Yeah.
That's something
okay.
I realized.
Huh.
Like in the last year or so. That's what that was referring to. And I'm not sure, like, I'm sure that there's a, you know, I'm sure that there's some movement there, you know, because people are obviously a lot more aware of things like Marvel Comics
mm-hmm.
these days and DC Comics. They're a lot more aware. But I think, like, from the publishers are still very much aware that of this history of calling this size something comics.
I see. All right, so we're at chapter 82 this time, Family by Spirit. And, I mean, certainly this chapter has some serious moments, but I thought it brought the comedy a lot more than we've seen in a while.
Oh, it starts right in. It just starts right in and then keeps it going. But what do you think about... I mean, this doesn't really relate to...
Yeah, the title page, it's Den and Ed.
Al's there. Very.
Yeah, I can see Al's part of his armor there behind.
He's got that old hand on the hips pose that the people in this comic do. Nobody in real life does, like, stands
well,
like this.
Or the Super Friends.
Well, no, because... The way that their hands are, it's not the Superman closed fist pose. It's the hands open. The hands are pointing towards the feet, which is a weird... it's a weird pose, you know? Unless you have, like, things sticking out from your hips that you can rest your hands on.
It's just not... Like six guns.
Yes, yes, yes. It's just... Exactly. It's just not a... Not a very comfortable or natural pose.
Al should be saying, draw, partner.
Uh-huh, Dan. But I can't read Ed's expression.
Well, yeah, his hair is kind of blocking his face somewhat. It's kind of a smile, I guess. A toothy smile.
But it's also his eyebrows are in the, you know, like some kind of strong emotion effort. Position, you know, like if it wasn't for the smile, you could say anger or concern. But I think combined with the smile, it's like, what are you doing there, boy? What are you doing there?
Yeah. Although I keep forgetting this, but I was looking at fandom.com this morning. Den is a girl.
What?
Yeah. I think maybe Memory Echo had mentioned that to us before. But yeah, Den is a girl. I mean, there's nothing in the story to indicate the dog's gender at all.
This is true.
There's kind of a tendency to automatically assume male unless told otherwise.
I know. It's like cats are girls and dogs are boys kind of thing. People, I show my pictures of my dog to people all the time, and they automatically assume that she's a boy. And I sometimes catch myself, you know, calling her boy, you know, just, I don't know why. Isn't that weird? That kind of persistence?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I mean, whoever heard of Dog Woman? Cat Woman, sure, but Dog Woman? No, Batman didn't fight Dog Woman.
Is there not a Dog Woman somewhere in the, there's gotta be. somewhere in the history of unknown superheroes. Somebody wrote
no
something.
Dog Man either. But.
Somebody wrote something which I'm not sure if that's true. In their tweet, they're talking about Neil Gaiman, but they're talking about how Marvel and DC had jointly registered the word superhero as their trademark or something.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You heard that, but how is that true? I mean, is that...
Well, I mean, I guess in marketing for a comic or something else, some kind of fiction, I guess they're the only ones who can use that expression.
Really?
I guess so.
I mean, do people follow that? Because...
Well, I mean, in everyday conversation, they can't police that, but like, I don't know, IDW, if they did a comic about costumed heroes, I don't think that they could say that they were superheroes.
Really? That's so bizarre, because, I mean, I still think, and it's still bizarre to me, though, but that a majority of American comics readers who decide they want to make their own comics, they're mostly focused on superheroes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Still, with all that's out there, there's still such a huge, like, and a lot of them talk about comics as if there are only superhero comics in the
yes.
world.
So, we pick up at, you know, where we left off, at the apartment with the two elderly doctors, married, where Ed and the two Chimera guys, I need to look at my notes again from last time for their names. So these are Darius and Heinkel.
Gory and...
yeah, Gorilla and Lion.
Yeah, yeah. But Ed is obviously eating French bread in a way that you do not eat French bread.
Yeah, the French bread that was sticking out of his grocery bag before, he's now just got it stuck in his mouth. And like half of it is gone, apparently.
He's eating it.
And yeah, we've got a lot of sound effects of nom, nom, nom through these first two pages.
This is the kind of thing that I think kind of messes food up for people, because I grew up thinking that like T-bone steaks were going to be really nice and juicy and sweet for some reason because of the way they're depicted in cartoons.
Sweet?
I don't. Yeah, because they just looked like candy. I don't know. It just didn't. See, I did not grow up eating steak because my mom was horrible, horrible, horrible at cooking it.
So the military guys that they just beat up are lying on the floor, and Ed says, so they've described me as someone with a red coat and a braid, huh? Which right now he has neither of those things. And he says, then I guess I'll keep this look for a while.
He doesn't mention the third attribute that they said.
Short. Yeah.
Yes.
Can't do anything about that as much as he'd like to. But yeah, he's looking at the slip of paper that the one soldier was looking at in the previous chapter with the description of Ed on it. So they're in the hallway, and then more military guys show up, the backup, and they're holding guns on the three of them. Ed just is still standing there chewing his bread.
Oh, he's so concerned. He's just chew, 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 chew. He's just so concerned.
And then he swallows it in an otherwise silent panel, and then the Chimera guys grab Ed and hold a gun to his head. Why don't you freeze? You want this kid's head to get blown off? And they say, you cowards, taking such a small child hostage.
I know.
And Ed is like, he called me small. And so they pretend that they're taking Ed hostage so that they can get away. And as the military guys are trying to chase them, the two doctors start grabbing at their legs, saying, thank you for coming. We were so scared. They threatened us. We had no choice. And the sound effect of grabbing his leg is glomp.
No, they're great. They're great. You're like, you know, get out of here. You're going to get us in trouble. But they're playing it to the hilt.
Yeah, they had been shooing them away in the very first panel. The second panel, like, yeah, no need to thank me. Just hurry up and get out of here. Shoo. There's like, you know, holding his hand, you know, to like brush them away. And so they go outside, Ed and the Chimera guys, and there are more military guys out there. And Heinkel says, eat lead. And he's shooting at them. And this is also played for comedy. Lots of shooting. And the two guys are like jumping behind a dumpster or whatever that is.
Okay, and they added that because it does not say, he doesn't say anything like that. He doesn't say anything like kurae or take this. He doesn't say anything like that.
There is a balloon there. What does it have?
He just says, otto.
Okay.
Like a, which is more like a, uh-oh, you know. Uh-oh and eat lead are not close at all.
I guess maybe it's more natural for the English language action story consumer.
I guess.
Maybe that was the thinking anyway.
Yeah.
So then they need a getaway vehicle, and we see this like flashy guy who's presenting his brand new car to this young girl. So cool. Take me for a ride, please, please. And then...
I had some deja vu here.
Yeah, because, I felt like I'd seen this scene before, too.
Right?
And not 10 years ago when I read this originally, but...
No. I think there was something with Mustang. Yeah, I think
feel
so.
Like this is a repeat panel. when Darius points a gun at them and says, give me your car, they hold up their hands and say, it's yours!
Yep.
And then in the next panel is they're screeching away in the car. Interestingly, screech is spelled S-K-R-E-E-E-E-A-C-H. I'd never seen A in screech before. I mean, it's pronounceable, but it looks like scree and then each, like each of you.
or screech, I guess. Screech. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean... It's making a very cacophonous sound in the Japanese. It's going, "Dugya gya gya!" Which, okay. For me, I would maybe go with like with "screech creech creech," maybe something like that.
By the way, I was just noticing. So, as in all these panels, Ed is looking really kind of bored or just like kind of eye-rolly, and in the panel where Darius demands the car, he's looking at the reader and kind of like, can you believe this kind of face?
Yep. Yeah. He's just very neutral. It's like, I'm gonna eat my bread, I'm gonna let this guy carry me to wherever, I'm not that concerned.
Right. So the military guys are now chasing after them. It's a car model E. Am I reading that as a Z or a 2?
EZO-16.
Yeah. They're all the rage. EZO, all the rich boys have them.
EZO-16, I think it's, yeah. It's the EZO-16 model.
So Ed and the guys are trying to get away, but the military is gaining on them. So Ed says, make a right. Turn here, they'll make a U-turn, and he claps.
No. First he says, wow, you really suck at driving, Gordy-san.
You're not very good at driving, are you, Mr. Gorilla? Don't call me Gorilla.
Yeah. And then he does the...
Yeah. So, and when he claps, we don't see it right away, what his alchemy accomplished here. But the military guys come screaming around the corner, and they can't see the car anywhere. The sports car that is their getaway vehicle. And they're like, huh? Where did that car go? Did they turn down an alley? And then as on the next page, we see this outrageous vehicle that looks like a dinosaur or a big beetle or something with three horns and a big mouth on it and teeth and all kinds of flame drawn on it.
Yeah, in other words, Ed's, you know,
yeah, Ed's
middle
design
school
sense.
notebook
yeah,
sketches.
I mean, that character trait stays consistent.
Yeah, I loved it.
His design ideas are way over the top.
I'm always there for that. Always there for that. Like his heavy metal logo design type of thing. Yeah,
that's what he's made their car look like. But a little puzzling here. So now the guys are pressuring him to change it to something more plain. But they're inside the car. They can't see what the outside looks like. But somehow they know anyway.
Well, maybe we can't. We don't actually see the interior. So it's possible.
Yeah, maybe the interior is also outrageous.
Yeah.
So he gives in and changes it to something more normal looking.
Don't compromise your design sense, Ed. Just you be you.
I mean, because if the military guys figured out that dinosaur beetle car was them, I mean, it's the most conspicuous car you ever saw.
Very true.
So now they've gotten away, and Ed is trying to figure out where Al would be. That there must be some, he must be able to predict where Al would go in the situation, that they could meet up again. They can't go to Fort Briggs because it's now occupied by Central City troops. So Ed is thinking, and then we have a scene change, and Hohenheim is saying, and that's the whole story. Because he'd said he wanted to tell Ed and Al everything of his background, and right. Ed's missing, but he went ahead and told Al about, you know, his being, you know, like living apparently centuries now, having once been a slave and then been made into a philosopher's stone. Hohenheim's worried that Al doesn't believe him. And Al says, I would seriously doubt the sanity of anyone who blindly fell for a story like that after suddenly being reunited with their father for the first time in over 10 years. Hohenheim says, I guess you're right. And Al says, but apparently I'm one of the insane ones.
Good old Al.
It's like someone once told me, in this world, nothing is impossible. And then we see that he's got kind of a shared experience, kind of, with Hohenheim, because, you know, Hohenheim's talking about how, you know, it hurts so much to see friends die while he never gets older. And for Al, it's, you know, as we've seen before, he doesn't like being the only one who's awake at night.
Yeah.
So it's not the same thing, but it's kind of similar, you know, feeling different and
alienated, yeah, alone,
mm-hmm,
isolated.
Al recalls the photo at Pinako's house taken about a decade ago. And of course, Hohenheim looks just the same in that picture.
Yeah. And mentions that you were drinking buddies with
Pinako.
And he's assuming that maybe that she wasn't talking about 10, 20 years ago, but maybe a much longer time ago.
Yeah, when Pinako said to Al that it had been a long time ago, that they had been drinking buddies for a long time. So for someone her age, it would be more than 10 or 20 years. Pinako introduced him to Tricia, and he fell in love with her immediately. She made my heart melt, he says, and Al is thinking, how can this guy say something so sappy with a straight face? Yeah, but then even Tricia passed away before him.
I once was talking about my first love with some coworkers. We were talking about deep stuff. But I said, like, I died inside, and this older guy just, like, kept... He would say, like, oh, man, we ran out of sugar. Oh, I think I just died inside. He was like, he really, like, really took the piss. I don't think I'll forget it.
And Al's concerned that, are he and Ed also philosopher stones?
Yes, I was thinking the same thing as I was reading this. I was thinking, like, wait a minute. Yeah, there's... You know, because so far there's been no indication in the story that Ed and Al are special because of some inherent quality. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like they're like Ed's skill is special. There's no doubt about it. But like he and Al both worked really hard to learn those skills, right? And they used their brains. So it's not like they're this like coming from some Jedi family. with special extra midichlorians or some crap like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, just to go back to that Star Wars thing, it's like the difference between Star Wars 8 and 9 is like 8 tried to establish that, spoiler here, Rey is not special. She's just who she is. And she, you know, not because she comes from any kind of lineage or anything. And then in 9 they go, nope, she's got lineage.
Yeah, I'm really off topic, but I'm really disappointed in how the constant changing of directors really made the sequels swerve left and right and left. And like, it would have been nice to have a more consistent story.
No doubt. At least know what you're going to do.
Without the Emperor coming back. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and just the way they used Finn and Poe was a crime, and Rose, they just, you know, they didn't make good use of them. They didn't, you know, they're like, all right, let's bring all the old folks back.
Well, and something I saw voiced recently, too, was there was never a scene with Luke, Leia, and Han together.
Mm.
That's also pretty disappointing. I mean, you had them all there. They were all still alive at the time. Let's have a scene with all three of them together. But
I don't know why Chewbacca's not in that equation that you just mentioned there.
Well, yeah, put him in. Put R2-D2 and C-3PO. Yeah,
that's it.
You're good. Obi-Wan.
The people who are on the dais. The people who are on the dais at the end of the first movie. You know, episode 4. Those are the people.
Right. And then Leia could say, yeah, Chewie, here's your medal. Sorry it took so long.
I love it. You should be the next director. Redo.
Well, can I do, like, redo on 7, 8, and 9?
Yes. You have my permission to do a complete redo of those.
Okay. So, anyway, Hohenheim says he's still, at his core, a human being. So, yeah, they are normal. But he says, the guy in Central City, Father, he's an imitation human disguised in living flesh.
What's interesting about his use of core here is that he's not being metaphorical. It seems to me like he's saying, you know, that you guys are from my actual core being, as if it's some physical thing, you know, his kaku, right? And so that kind of, it's not nakami, it's not like my makeup is basically human. He's like, my actual core, my soul or my core is
your,
a human.
Your center.
Yeah, it's a human thing. And so, that's something you don't have to worry about. I was very relieved to read that.
And I don't know, we haven't really talked about this, I don't think, but it's interesting, and this, you know, part of what confused us earlier on, that the guy who is a carbon copy of the main character's father is called Father. I'm not sure what's going on with that. Why did she call him Father? Was she just trying to confuse people like us? Like, so we think, oh, they're the same person.
Well, yes, I think that was part of the, during the build-up until we figured out what was going on. You know, I'm sure that was part of it. But also, it seems like that Father became a father before Hohenheim did.
How so?
I mean, didn't he create these other homunculi?
I guess so. Yeah, it would have been long before Hohenheim met Trisha.
I mean, didn't he kind of make this effed up family, you know? I mean, obviously he doesn't know how to take care of them as a family, which is a point of this chapter, right? He doesn't treat them as a family. He just only demands their absolute loyalty, you know, and abeyance, which is why he's a crappy father.
Yeah, well, and Hohenheim thinks that he's a crappy father because he ran away, but he's certainly a better father than father.
Well, if you're going to compare yourself to absolute evil, I think we can all yeah, say I mean, we are amazing fathers. We actually don't know how Hitler would have been as a father, and we don't really care to know. Don't care to know. But there was an interesting documentary about people who grew up with the family name Hitler, and how that like seriously affected, you know.
Yeah, where could you move on Earth that people wouldn't think, oh, he must be related to that dictator?
Yeah, I mean, I'd move somewhere where you're allowed to change your name. That's where I'd move.
That'd be the solution.
You know, and I wouldn't do any stupid anagram thing where you just mix up the letters.
Lit her, you know, Relted or something. I don't know.
You know, like Matsumoto Leiji, when he created his bad guy for Yamato. I mean, that character's name is in English, it's Deathlock, but it's actually Disra. In other words, Death Hitler, Deathler.
Okay.
So, very subtle, very subtle.
Hi, I'm Sophie, and I haven't seen a lot of movies.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm here to help with that.
And we are SP Film Viewers.
Each week, we take a deep dive into films that Sophie is seeing for the first time, some of which are deemed classics, some of which are my favourites, and some are just to try and get a reaction from her.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we have a lot of fun talking about what we've watched.
And we hope you have fun listening to our light-hearted thoughts and ramblings on this cinematic journey.
So tune in every Thursday on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts from.
Okay, so then Al pulls out, apparently from his loincloth, which, even though he's a suit of armor, it kind of grosses out Hohenheim. But he's got a slip of paper, a couple sheets of paper, with their plan for, he says, we've been piecing together what they're up to, and we think they're trying to use this country to recreate another situation like Xerxes. We have to stop them now before it's too late. And Al's thinking the best way would be to destroy the underground tunnel. But Hohenheim says, Bad idea. A powerful homunculus named Pride is down there.
Have you actually tried to close up and read the language that's written here?
No, I haven't.
Let me tell you what it says.
Need my other glasses.
Because I've deciphered how to read it, and it reads like this.
This was written by Charlie Brown's teacher. Charlie Brown's teacher is an alchemist.
I saw a t-shirt that showed like these silhouettes of Charlie Brown looking characters in a classroom, and then there was a teacher in front of the classroom silhouette also with a trombone. And my daughter goes, I don't get it. And she's in band. She's in band. And I go, okay, so how do you think they make that? I said, how do the teachers talk? And she goes like, wah, wah, wah. And I go, how do you think they make that sound? And she goes, oh, the trombone.
Yeah, with a mute.
Yeah, wah, wah, yep. So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Al thinks they need to destroy it before the circle's complete. Hohenheim thinks it's already complete, and we know that it is. Al says, then how can you be so relaxed? And Hohenheim, because it's not that day yet. And Al's confused, but Hohenheim tells him the answer can be found looking up at that statue of Leto, the sun god, that's embedded in that roof. Hohenheim says he's waiting for the day of reckoning.
Do you think it's going to be an eclipse?
I don't.
These prophecies are often eclipses because
that sort of rings a bell. There might have been an eclipse involved.
They often are. You know, in fiction, these prophecies are often, because it's just so like the day the sun disappeared, you know, the day of the black sun or something like this, you know.
Yeah.
So he's a sun god, right?
Leto, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I rest my case.
Leto, didn't he play the Joker? It was somebody else.
Boom, boom. I'm placing my week's wages on solar eclipse.
Okay. So now we rejoin Beto running through the bowels of Central with Greed, the lean version of Greed, of course, chasing after him. And Beto doesn't understand, well, he doesn't understand why this guy is talking like Greed. And he's got, you know, Greed's kind of claw hand with that metallic skin on it.
Mm.
And why are you imitating Greed? And Lean says, imitating? You're looking at the genuine article. Beto can verify that together they quote the original Greed, money, women, status, and honor. I want it all. And so now Beto's really confused, and Lean doesn't know Beto. He says, who are you? And then I didn't even quite grasp this at first until it became clear what it was, but there's a tall, thin panel of kind of a smudginess or almost like TV interference, and the sound effect is Zah.
Or a brush stroke.
Yeah.
Or like, Zah. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. So I was also as like, what is this? What could this be?
And Lean is looking really confused.
But I was thinking, yeah, that this Greed doesn't seem to remember.
Right, doesn't remember Beto.
But he gets the relationship. He's like, okay, we were nakama, right?
Yes, Beto's trying to remind him, it's me, Beto, remember from the Devil's Nest? Don't tell me you've forgotten your friend's face. Lean is, yeah, that's right, we were friends. Beto says, do you remember me now? And you turn the page, and Lean, Greed, runs his metallic hand right through Beto. Sorry, I think that's the old Greed you're talking about. Now, last time I said I'd seen a spoiler and I knew what happened to Beto. I said that because I'd accidentally seen the in memoriam box at the end of the book.
Oh, no.
So I didn't know how he died, but I knew he died.
So this, I was like, what? We've been following this poor character just to see him get murderized. Mm. But then it becomes clear why this is important after a little bit. But we,
yeah,
obviously this triggers something.
Right. And after Beto dies, there are more of those Zah panels. And Lean's looking kind of confused, and his hand is shaking. And you turn the page and you've got a big Zah, and it's a memory of Loa, Dorset, and Martel from the back.
Mm.
The chimeras that he knew at, what did he say the name of it was? The
Devil's Nest.
Yeah. Devil something or other. And of course they were big in volume 7 and 8. I went back and looked. I think it was in 8 that they all died.
Yeah, and we kind of liked them.
Yeah.
Especially Martel.
Didn't seem like such bad people. So now Lean is really reacting to this. He seems to be feeling sick. And his hand changes back to normal hand. Now, then it became a little confusing to me. I mean, even though the dialogue is in different fonts for Lean and Greed talking to each other, it's still a little confusing to read. And I I had to read it a few times before I kind of grasped what's going on here.
Well, I think it's confusing because you have three elements in play. You've got former greed, you've got current greed, and you've got Lin.
Hmm.
You know? And, I mean, former greed and current greed, even if they're the same greed, former greed, obviously, I mean, current greed is supposed to have, like, no memory of previous greed. So there's a mm-hmm. split there. But obviously, this is something is breaking through. All these, and the slashes end up, like, looking like souls, right? Surrounding, and they're little faces.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, probably the composition of Greed's Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, yes. But something is, you know, tearing. It's tearing me apart!
And we see more memories from the Devil's Nest.
You can see that Greed was a much better daddy than Daddy. You know, because it looked like he sincerely, like, they're showing a scene of him kind of, we don't know if this actually, you know, plays out that way in the past volumes. I mean, he was still, you know, a dictator type, but you can see that he's kind of, here he's patting Beto on the head in this flashback. And Vito is smiling, yeah. So there is this kind of familial type of feeling that's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their loyalty was, I mean, they were actually loyal. They weren't just afraid of greed, you know?
Yeah, and so as I'm reading this, I guess Lean is sort of scolding Greed for not being true to his friends, and Greed insists those are the memories of the old Greed, not mine. Lean says, then why are you in such pain?
Mm.
So the new Greed tried to kind of deny himself. The old Greed and the new Greed, they're the same Philosopher's Stone, right?
Yes.
So the memories you would think would be there. Lean threatens to... He says, if you let your guard down, my soul is going to take this body back. He was going to kick Greed out. So Greed insists that Father purified him and got rid of the old memories. But Lean isn't buying it.
Yeah.
Friendship isn't something you can just forget. I mean, friendship is such a theme through this whole book.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of comics, like, people become friends in one chapter, you know, it's like they were enemies, and somehow in one little arc, less than a book wide, you know, in like just a chapter or two, now they're friends, and they're, you know, mm-hmm. That's what I liked about, like, the Midaijin Chaos. There's a chaos, future man chaos, I don't know what the English translation is, of Tezuka's work, and that these two enemies, it's like the movie Enemy Mine, where two different aliens have to work together to survive. But they really, the friendship is honestly earned, you know? It's bit by bit. It's a repetitive thing that, you know, the friendship is built up in layers. It's not like this one holding up the radio, actually, I love you, like one emotional bang thing that convinces the other person, you know, it's this like an actual earned thing. And I think that's what we see in this series, is that these relationships, you know, they're tested and they are earned, the gorilla guy.
Well, like how they've made up with the Scar. That's been kind of a gradual process, and, you know, the incident with Winry holding a gun on him and other things kind of gradually got them to working together.
And, you know, Scar dealing with good people who are not his enemies, like Little May,
mm-hmm.
Mei Ling, and this kind of thing also. Mei Chang. Also, I think, opened his eyes, of course. So I think there's, you know, I mean, that's what it has to be. That's what it should be. And that's what you can do with a long form comic like this, is you can really have these characters grow. And I mean, I think that's what I liked about the first serial animation I ever saw was Star Blazers, which is Space Battleship Yamato or Space Cosmo. They had different titles for it in English, Cosmo Ship Yamato or whatever. But the Leiji Matsumoto story,
mm-hmm.
that, well, it's not only him, but there's, but the thing is it was very much like the Earth has this many days left. So you have to show them in order, you know? But like Speed Racer was the first one animation I watched. And it, you know, it could be shown pretty much in any order. And also Battle of the Planets, that Gatchaman one could have probably shown in pretty much any order. There's a couple of two-parters. But like that was the first animated show ever I'd ever seen that had, like, it was in a series. And so characters could change. Scooby-Doo's never going to grow, you know? He's never going to grow. Scrappy-Doo's never going to become interesting. you know. Jeez, Scoob! What's that guy?
Casey Kasem?
Yes, but who's the...
Shaggy?
Shaggy. Shaggy's never going to quit drugs. That's why he's got the munchies, you know.
Right, yeah. He's a pot smoker without us ever seeing any marijuana.
Yeah, but I'm sure, like, if it was smell-a-rama that we could smell the patchouli coming off his unwashed T-shirt.
So. Yeah, and so there are more of these flashbacks, and one of them is Wrath with his sword. And Lean is saying, you turned your back on your real family, your kindred spirits, you gave them up. And I think he's talking about when the military killed them all. Right?
Yes.
And he says, that's why you're not worthy of being called Greed, the selfish bastard who will stop at nothing to get what he wants. Well, but isn't selling out your friends something a greedy person would do?
If what you want, because obviously what he wants is for his nakama, right? His crew to be benefiting with him. It seems like that's what we're getting, the fact that he's not as selfish as he comes across, because, you know, in other words, these things aren't pure manifestations of the sin, you know what I mean? Like, they're not pure manifestations of evil necessarily, is what we're seeing here. You know, his name is Greed.
Mm-hmm.
He's input the fact that he's greedy and that he wants everything. But obviously, part of that everything is he wants a crew to appreciate it with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, she set that up, you know, so many volumes ago. I mean, he's the only homunculus that we've seen who, like, had a crew like that. Right. Otherwise, the homunculi just seem to hang out with each other.
Well, yeah, those other homunculi, they found their family with each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like gluttony and was
lust
so
and, or, yeah, lust and gluttony and envy.
Yeah. Envy's got all his souls, I guess. But, like, Greed was kind of a little bit pushing back against Father, because I think he was like, you know, I'm eventually going to sit on that throne or something, you know?
So now we're at Bradley's house, and we see him there with his wife and quote-unquote son.
The first thing we think is like, oh, man, he doesn't realize that it's going to be 2-on-1.
Right, yeah, since Selim is pride. There's some noises coming from outside the door, and Lean walks in, and he's dispatched the guard, who's just hanging onto the guard's shirt. as he comes in the door. And then he leaps at Bradley, and they have a battle here for several pages. And there are more and more of these Za flashback panels.
Yeah, and you see, like, you forget how many people were actually at the Devil's Nest.
Yeah, he says, "What's happening to me, Wrath? It won't go away. These memories, they won't go away. My head feels like it's going to explode. And you, you're there too, King Bradley. What did you do to my guys?" Wrath says, "Greed, you should have left the past where it belongs, dead and buried."
He would have been happy to, it seems like, you know.
So then we have like four or five pages of just battle with no dialogue. And Bradley tries to like slice Lean in the neck, but his sword breaks because he's changed to the metallic skin.
Well, before that, you see...
Yeah, I think I missed that. Selim has the long black arms coming from him.
Yeah. He's kind of anticipating the need for him to take action. And I think it's kind of... it's slowed down by the coffee cup falling to the ground, which also distracts Lean and allows Bradley to get a chop in at the neck. Or it just allows the next attack. But eventually that goes to the neck attack. Yeah. But Greed is all diamonded up.
And of course, Bradley's wife has no idea what's going on because she doesn't know the rest of her family are homunculi.
Yeah.
So finally, Lean jumps out the window. Crash.
And Sedum's little shadow self sneaks back to become a regular shadow.
And Selim is looking angrily out towards us. And yeah, he retracts the Mr. Fantastic arm. And Lean is outside and kind of looking around trying to figure out where to go.
Well, I think that's not all that's happening. Because he's
looking at the... What's up with the moon?
Because there's font has changed.
There's a crescent moon, and then a couple panels later, there's a full moon.
So the font has changed, right? For him speaking. It's not the bolded font that it was.
Well, I mean, before it was sort of bouncing back and forth between regular font and Greed font.
That's true. But I got the feeling that this is where a change happened.
That's
how I read it.
Maybe he asserted some control over the Philosopher's Stone.
And then he decided, I need to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it took him several days to get there. Thus, the moon.
Okay, well, it seems like it took Ed and the Chimera guys also a few days, if that's the case. But they go back to the house that I went back and looked this up. They went there in Chapter 48 with Al and some others. And that was where, in Chapter 50, Gluttony ate Ed, Lean, and Envy.
Mm. Oh, this is the place.
Yeah, house. This is that house.
There is a house in New Orleans. I can't say more than that. We have to pay the jazz rack fee.
So Ed's saying it's a hideout we used once before, and so I was thinking, where did we see this house before? And I realized it was then.
Yeah, there's a hint. There's a big old circular chomp out of the left side of the house, which kind of should trigger some memories for us.
Yeah, from the fight with Gluttony.
I mean, it's hard. You can only see it in the first panel. In the second panel, a dialogue box kind of covers the whole. You can just see damage. But in the very first panel, it's obviously a round hole.
So Ed anticipated that Al must be there, but they get inside and nobody's there. Sound effect is empty.
Garang. Yeah, I guess I get that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no English sound effect for emptiness. Mm. And it's really a mess inside. And the guys are saying, there's nobody here and hasn't been for ages. And Darius has knocked him on the head. Ed has a big bump on his head. Some big brother you are. We hurried all this way for nothing. But then there's a sound outside, and it's Lean, who walks in and falls to the floor. Ed says, Lean, and then thinks, wait, which is it? Greed? And Lean says, so hungry. I'm saved. I never thought I'd run into friends in a place like this. And Ed says, it's Lean.
Yeah.
And we end with the sound effect of his growling stomach grumble.
Yes, yes, yes. Very good. Good stuff.
Yeah, and as I mentioned last time, this is a really vague chapter break because the next chapter gives its title at the end. But yeah, this is the end of the chapter.
So yeah, so like last time, like I said, I had to put in two bookmarks, one to remind myself to end right here, because you mentioned that chapter break. But yeah, a lot of good stuff. Not even sure which sound effect.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the stomachs, ending the chapter on a sound effect is kind of asking me to choose to choose that one.
Well, I think I'm going to go with the sound of the elderly doctors grabbing glomp. The military guy's leg, glomp. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a good one. It's not that special in Japanese, but that's a good, because you glom onto something.
Yeah.
You know?
Honorable mention for empty.
Yeah. Again, like in Japanese, it's like it's not that surprising a thing.
What was the empty in Japanese?
Garang.
Garang. Yeah, so like gara gara is empty.
Yeah, that's right.
Emptiness.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Very good. Garang. Like that. It's like ringing emptiness. So, yeah, I'm going to go with gugyu. Which is how the chapter ends.
Okay, the stomach growling.
Yeah, with this great line extending the sound all the way to the bottom of the page.
Yeah, in English, they add an extra R, and there's no U. It's grumble. So, what, seven letters extending off of the bottom of the panel.
Now, have you ever actually listened to that sound of your stomach, like when it makes a funky noise? It's, you know, it's like those blob things from the Herculoids. Did you ever see that show? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
Speaking of the Herculoids. I'm kidding. But that was one of the first impressions that I ever learned was
Okay. I don't know. Herculoids, I think that's from the 60s, isn't it?
That's right.
It was rerun on Saturday morning in like the late 70s.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
At the time, my brother and I thought it was the stupidest thing we ever saw.
I loved it. I loved the Herculoids. I loved the... Who's the guy that designed? Alex Toth.
Ah.
Alex Toth did all those series designs. I liked the big gorilla monster guy. You know, they had like three or four different monster friends that they depended on. And you had the same guy doing the voice for Space Ghost as the dad, so you felt safe. It's so weird that my favorite character in Battle of the Planets, like the leader of the team, is Casey Kasem, and also Shaggy is Casey Kasem, and also the top 40 radio DJ was Casey Kasem. And then when I finally saw what Casey Kasem looked like, because he was in this movie called The Dark, where you see him in all his very, very short ethnic glory. And You're like, wow, that's different than I expected.
Hmm. Casey also played Robin in a number of Batman cartoons.
That's right. You know what? I love, that was my Batman for the longest time, was
like Super Friends Batman.
The Super Friends Batman. He was upbeat, you know, he wasn't a downer. And, you know, Superman was his friend. And, you know, that was my Batman for the longest time. Who's your Batman? Is it Adam West?
It's always been Adam West from the beginning. Never changed.
Yeah. Good old AW.
Well, I guess there was a period where I, like in the late 80s, I was kind of like, I still watched it in the mid 80s though, but I was kind of feeling like, well, maybe it should be more serious now, but, and then I didn't read comics at all for a while, and I didn't watch Batman for a long time either after I came to Japan, but, but yeah, I guess it was always in the back of my mind. It's one of those kind of basic identity things. I was thinking about that yesterday. You know, there are certain like bits of pop culture that, you know, you hit them at a certain age and they just kind of become your basis for everything. I mean, I think for me, it's been Adam West Batman, Spider-Man, and of all things, Minnesota Vikings. I can't imagine rooting against the Vikings. I feel so much more invested when I'm watching a Vikings game compared to anybody else.
I'm glad that you're all different kinds of nerds. You know? I consider sports fans some of the biggest nerds. They're just big old nerds. They will not admit to being total nerds. I was like, do you wear the costume? Well, yeah, I mean,
they're nerd, just as nerdy as a Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah, do you wear the costume of of the people you're fanning on? Yes. Have you ever painted your face? Yes.
Yes.
How many statistics do you know about your team? Lots. You are a nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, just a different flavor of nerd.
That's right.
Sports nerd, superhero nerd, fantasy nerd. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Manga nerd.
Yeah. There's people that are just the nerds for the weirdest, and it's great. I love it. And it's like when I meet somebody, I was like, skip all the small talk. Just tell me what you nerd on. That's what I want to know. What are you nerding on? If it's fishing, good luck to you. I'll see you in the next life. Or, you know, if it's something, I just like, you know. But do you have anything else that I can connect to? Anything? Movies? Nothing? No? Comics? No? Okay. Well, that was a good one. I got my money's worth.
Yeah, so was it an equivalent exchange?
It was such an equivalent exchange.
Yeah. We might have come out a bit ahead, actually.
I think so too. And how do we put it in our own special way? What do you get?
So the law of equivalent exchange is
you get what you pay for.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I'll see you next time.
Next time.
Our theme is Winter Fiend by Cryosyncope. You can follow us on Twitter at LOEE Podcast or email us at LOEEPodcast@deconstructingcomics.com. Support our show on Patreon at patreon.com/deconcomics. See you in 2 weeks. The Law of Equivalent Exchange is a production of deconstructingcomics.com.